Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. In the week or two leading up to the Columbus Pride Parade and Festival, probably it's a bit predictable for the folks at Outlook Columbus. The usual rundown of events will be promoted, special guests, entertainers to look for on the stages. The themes are positive and political, but mostly positive and proud. But this year, after a trio of gay men were attacked in three separate incidents during the past 2 weeks, the tone changed a bit. And we're going to talk about a little bit about that in terms of Pride Week today. Joining me now is Outlook Columbus editor Bob Vitale to get at some of the news and tell us what happened leading up to this. Welcome to the show, Bob.
Thank you, Ann.
So, you guys broke the story in Outlook. Could you kind of recap the three attacks and catch us up on what's happened in the past week?
Sure. It was from June 6th, the evening of June 6th on a Thursday, to the early morning hours of June 10th, which was early Monday morning. three gay men in Columbus were attacked in three different neighborhoods. The first occurred in Marion Village, south of downtown. The second was in Wineland Park near 5th and Indianola. The third was in Old Town on Broad Street near Parsons Avenue. The three men each were attacked by a group of men, kicked, punched. Only one was robbed. One of the men was walking home from work with a friend. They kissed goodnight. Someone who had been watching from across the street jumped him from behind as he passed. He had a backpack. He had a cell phone. He had tips from his night at work. None of it was taken. The three men all reported it to Columbus police. There was one arrest. One of the men felt uneasy about people following him, and the men following him made some vulgar comments that kind of indicated a bias against gay people. So he was on the phone with 911 when the attack occurred. Police arrived really quickly, made an arrest. That case is in court today. But all three men reported it. They reported it to Bravo. They're very public about their feelings that the attacks were because they're gay.
And what has been the response by law enforcement to that?
I think Columbus police have taken it very seriously. There's very specific legal definitions of hate crimes. One of the crimes they've classified as a robbery. The victim does feel it was a hate crime. It took place when he had been at a gay bar on the south side. He was outside smoking when men approached him. I'm not sure if they're classified legally by the Columbus police and the FBI definition of hate crimes within the LGBTQ community here in Columbus. People believe they were all hate crimes.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and it is Pride Week, and we want to talk about the Pride Parade and the festival and all of the fun events and so forth coming up. But this year, there is a little bit of a different tone after these attacks that Bob Vitale from Outlook Columbus was just telling us about. If you have a question or comment about them, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Bob will try to answer to the best of his knowledge. Coming up, we will be talking with Gloria McCauley. She's executive director of Bravo. That stands for Buckeye Region Anti-Violence Organization. And also Carla Rothen, executive director of Stonewall Columbus. A recent Pew Research Center survey said that 92% of America's LGBTQ community says that society is more accepting of them than 10 years ago. And I think that that's generally what people think about Columbus. What is your sense about where this violence is coming from? Or why now?
Right. There's been an increase in violence in New York City as well, which, I think people gay people there feel maybe safer than they do in Columbus. You know, it's an open, welcoming place. There's kind of a feeling that this might be something we're going to have to endure for a while. I think as issues involving LGBT rights are more in the mainstream news, in Congress, votes in states around the country, our issues are high on the agenda right now in the country, and that makes the community a lot more visible, and that makes people who don't like lesbian and gay and bisexual and transgender people, that makes them angrier. And I think there's kind of a feeling that they might be lashing out in the foreseeable future.
There's just been one arrest in one of the cases, right?
Right.
What do we know? And everyone's pretty sure they're not related.
Right.
Any sense of gang action here?
I don't think so.
That hasn't been brought up?
No.
What about just the demographic? Are they young? Are they older? Are they...
The attackers?
Yeah, the attackers.
I believe they were all men in their 20s and 30s. I've not heard any affiliations they have or anything like that. I don't think it was, I was telling people last week, we tend to think of anti-gay as the organized anti-gay groups. You know, I really doubt any of these attackers was in an organization that opposes gay rights. I think they're just people who've been influenced by anti-gay bias for years, you know?
Some say that most of the violence goes unreported, that there's other instances of this in Columbus and we don't really hear about it. Do you think that's true? And if so, why?
I think it is. I really do. That's what was, we always try to find something positive out of bad things. And I think that was the one thing that people felt, and besides the community's reaction, which was so supportive and positive, all three men reported it to police. They reported these attacks to police. They put it on Facebook. They put photos of themselves beaten up on Facebook so they could let people see what happened. They're not hiding. They're not ashamed. And I think Gloria McCauley here from Bravo told me last week that that's one reason that LGBT people are targeted for violence, is that there's an old stereotype that we won't fight back, that we won't report it to police, that we're too ashamed to publicly identify as LGBTQ and talk about what happened to us.
Well, let's just bring on Gloria McCauley now, Executive Director of the Buckeye Region Anti-Violence Organization, Bravo. Gloria, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Well, okay, so... These three guys reported it, but that's the good news. It's unusual, right? That's the point, is the myth isn't a myth. It's true that people still tend not to report these attacks, right?
It depends where we're talking about. Okay. If we're talking about Columbus, we actually have a pretty good report rate, although it might shock people to know that the report rate is about 35%. Meaning if 100 people call Bravo, 35 of them will report to the police. When I first started doing this eons ago.
We don't talk those kind of things.
Right. We had a 7% report rate.
Wow.
So we've gone from 7 to 35. Columbus police have done an excellent job. I've been training every recruit in Columbus Police since 1990. And they have had an excellent response. And we've also been training the community that it's okay to work with the police, and we help them with that. And that has increased the report rate. It's still 35%.
So that's a lot of that fear comes from going to the police in the first place. A fear of the police?
Sometimes people know that a police report is a public record.
Okay.
And if you report a hate crime, you know, an anti-LGBT hate crime.
That must mean you're...
Exactly. Although a hate crime doesn't mean you're LGBT. It just means you're perceived as.
Okay.
So it's also, if you're outside the city, it's not unusual for people to lose their home. You know, get evicted by a landlord because we don't have a non-discrimination statewide law. We're covered here in Columbus. But if somebody is from outside the city, there's a very few municipalities in Ohio that actually provide protections. So people are really reluctant to be public.
So if you come out by way of a police report in this way, you're not protected outside of the city of Columbus in your job, in your where you live, mm-hmm. with your landlord, and that sort of thing.
And there could be child custody issues, you know, lots of ramifications about being publicly out. So we don't require folks to make police reports. We help them if they want to, but
Bob, did
you? I think one encouraging thing last week, one of the men who was attacked, I think, reported it to police before he reported it to Bravo, which
Absolutely.
I think is a good thing.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if it's a fear of police or just that fear of, I'm not sure where the fear is still from. I think it's just kind of a deep-seated thing in gay people.
Well, I would imagine there's an element of not that they deserve it, but of humiliation involved, feeling like you're being targeted in that way. And I mean, I have felt violated and humiliated when someone steals something from me.
Right. Mm.
So when someone takes away your safety like that, I would think there's a feeling of violation and humiliation and a diminishing kind of effect.
Well, and particularly when it's in a neighborhood where you live. Because where we live is where we think we should feel safe. And when that happens, it's a violation of our personal space. And that's really hard for most of us to grip and go on with.
My guests right now, Bob Vitale, editor of Outlook Columbus. Also with us, Gloria McCauley, executive director of the Buckeye Region Anti-Violence Organization, Bravo. We'll have links on our website to both of those organizations. Our website is wosu.org/allsides. Coming up, we're going to bring on the show Carlo Rothan. She's executive director of Stonewall Columbus. Of course, there's a link to that as well at wosu.org/allsides. So stay with us. We have more talk about violence and also about Pride and the Pride Week and festival parade, blah, blah, lots of fun stuff coming up. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Being a teenager and looking for a job means learning some simple do's and don'ts, like this one.
Ah, voicemail. You know what to do, stupid.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Sometimes the biggest problem is figuring out when not to act like a teenager. We'll have that and the rest of the day's business news next time on Marketplace from 8 p.m.
This afternoon at 6 on 89.7 NPR News.
Support comes from the Columbus Metropolitan Club, presenting their weekly forum. Wednesday at noon, it's a leadership legacy special with art collector and advocate Ron Pizzuti, interviewed by Tim Farron of the Columbus Dispatch. For information and tickets, visit columbusmetroclub.org.
Discover more about WOSU with the FYIE newsletter. Get emails with program highlights and much more. Visit wosu.org/email to sign up.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about Pride Week in Columbus and how it will be celebrated this year, but also celebrated with a little bit of a twist after a recent spate of violent attacks on gay men and three separate incidents. Still with us is Outlook Columbus editor Bob Vitale. Also with us, Gloria McCauley, executive director of Buckeye Region Anti-Violence Organization, better known as Bravo. And joining us now is Carla Rothan. She's executive director of Stonewall Columbus. Welcome back to the show, Carla.
Thank you.
At least once a year.
Thank you for having me.
Last Friday was Wear Pink in support of the LGBTQ community and against violence. Carla, was that trio of reported attacks, such as it was, even though you know that there are more than that out there that are reported, was it a wake-up call for the community at large?
I think so. I think that people coming together when there's violence that happens in your community and coming out and standing up and is really important. It brings us all together. You know, we all, just like any community, we have our little, conflicts as, with organizations, and we're trying to do this or trying to do, we all do. But when something bad happens, of course, we're a family and we come together and we fight together.
And last week it was like the community, it was everybody who supported.
Yes. All of our elected officials, all of our businesses, ally businesses included. So it was really a great opportunity for us to come together as a city, I think.
Some months ago, someone harassed a couple of guys who were holding hands and laughing in a food truck line, I guess, after a show one weekend night. And the crowd and the food truck employees turned on the harasser. And that was a gold star moment for the city, received kudos across the country. Mm-hmm. Conversely, does something like this give a black eye to the community? Is that another reason why sometimes you think, gosh, you wish it wasn't reported? Ever, Gloria?
No. Some people say, well, you're targeting yourself because you're out. But, we've had a long history of trying to make sure that folks come out in our community because we know that it cuts down on discrimination. The more people know that people that are gay and lesbian, bisexual, transgender, the less likely they are to discriminate against them. So we try to encourage that. So I think all across the country, people were wearing pink. We had people doing that. So it's Facebook. It's the media now. And we were out in the media all the time. So it's even going to be even more so in the coming month with the two Supreme Court decisions that are coming down. So
Right. We're
ready.
Proposition 8 out of California and
Windsor
Defense of Marriage Act in, at the federal level.
Mm-hmm.
Gloria?
I'm not real conversant with Twitter, et cetera, but I was told that it was 6 worldwide on Twitter.
Trending at 6?
Yeah. And one of the Facebook photos was one of the survivor's brother in Afghanistan wearing a pink scarf, posted it.
At first, when I first just got on Facebook and was wandering around in Twitter, I couldn't tell if there was already a pink Wear Pink Day for some other larger LGBT reason. And I was confused at first. And
it was
then I
organic.
Realized that it had spread that far.
Yeah.
But trending number six in the world is, that's huge.
And I think the community reaction has an important impact, not only for these particular three survivors, but for any other survivors that are out there, that the community is behind them. And that we do consider ourselves a family.
Bob Vitale, as far as reporting it as a journalist, what triggered the story for you? When did it become a story?
It was Monday morning. The first attack was a gentleman who was visiting Columbus from northern Kentucky. So he reported it to police. He went home. There was a report on a Cincinnati TV station about it that weekend. It wasn't until Monday morning that we heard about the attack on Chris Cradiville, who was a union employee who was attacked in Wineland Park. His friends were talking about it on Facebook. And then we heard about the other, the attack the week before. We started hearing about the attack in Old Town. There was a gay bar that was burglarized that week too, the week before. That we had first heard was a robbery, but it occurred when the bar was closed and no one was there. So it alarmed us, you know, if this was something that was going on, if it were the same group that was targeting people. Those are the things we tried to find out about as quickly as we could. So, you know, from, you know, I do feel bad because I think there's a lot that doesn't go reported. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of, you know, violence, either if people don't report it or if it just doesn't get to us. But I think that the three occurred in such a short time, it really alarmed people. And the community responded not just with the Pink Friday, but bars began telling patrons, we'll walk you to your car. You know, Gloria gave great tips for people for when they're out. One of the bars has organized a session for employees of LGBT bars and restaurants to give them safety tips for themselves and for their customers.
Because a lot of times they're the last people out of the bar latest at night, right?
Right. So, you know, the communities responded not just with the Pink Friday, but with real concrete ways to increase safety and to make these tips more publicly known and, you know, and ways to keep each other safe.
I know one group where they were giving away pink T-shirts, but asking for donations for Bravo, and they raised a little bit of money.
Yes, they did.
How much?
$1,267. I got the money yesterday.
Not bad.
Yeah.
And there's a big party at Axis Friday night.
Correct.
Where, you know, a lot of the drag performers performed for free, gave their tips to Bravo. I believe that raised about $12,000, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, the Axis party?
Yes.
Wow.
It was overwhelming to watch this community really come together and support each other and be proud of who we are and say, we are not going to take this. We are not the old stereotype of silent.
I think the statement that that makes, too, is not just within the community. Every time something like this happens, I think of some teenager who's not out yet and the message it sends to him or her, you know, about what their life will be when they come out. And so I think the community responding that way really sent a message to young people that they'll be fine.
There's more of us than there are of them.
Right, right.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. If you have a question or comment, want to talk about Pride, celebrations are coming. Well, they've been going on all week, all different kinds of things been going on all week, but the big parade's on Saturday and the festival and so forth. So if you have a question or comment about that, want to talk about the issues we've been discussing so far, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Of course, you can also check out our Facebook page and post your question or comment there, or tweet us at allsideswosu. I can never remember. Here it is. WOSU All Sides. Stop, stop. If you want to tweet us, it's WOSU All Sides. Gloria, Bravo, I don't know if it was a national arm or Bravo, put out a national report on hate violence in early June.
Mm-hmm.
And even then it said that Ohio remains one of the top reporting states. How does Ohio rank, and where is this happening in Ohio?
Well, it happens everywhere in Ohio. Mm-hmm. It actually happens everywhere in the U.S., we are part of a national coalition, the National Coalition of Anti-Violence Programs, and we do assist in putting out the national report every year on hate violence, as well as a national report on intimate partner violence. And Bravo remains in the top five of hate violence reports, but that doesn't mean that Ohio is, you know, the hate crime capital of the world. It means we've been doing our work and getting people to report. There are many locations around the U.S. where there is not an anti-violence program for people to report to.
So you shouldn't assume because there's zero reporting that
Correct.
There's zero attacking,
Correct.
Right?
So our report numbers, we had a 6% increase over last year. But that just reflects the number of people reporting. You know, I try to keep statistics real.
Okay.
And not let them get out of control. We do have a lot of reports from Ohio. People are still being victimized here. And here in Columbus, in spite of being one of the best cities in the nation.
Rob in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Rob.
Hey, thanks a lot for having my comment. Mm-hmm. I'm a gay man. And I'm wondering...
Say, Rob, I'm going to interrupt you for just a second and ask you to pull the phone away from your mouth a little bit. We're getting a lot of static.
Is that better?
It's a little better, yeah.
Yeah. I'm a gay man, and I just would like your guest to comment. I, at the risk of unnecessarily alarming maybe the gay community and the community at large, isn't it important maybe to comment on the nature of the attack and maybe... How do we distinguish between just a regular violent robbery and a homophobic attack?
Gloria, how do you know? Do you just, is it like pornography? You know it when you see it?
Sometimes. A lot of times with people who have been victimized, they have a gut feeling, you know, a particular location, they're outside a particular club and feel like they've been targeted. Unfortunately, there are thugs in the world, and not all of them are very smart, and they will say things, and then it becomes very obvious what the motivation is. We go with the victim and survivor's gut feeling on how this happened or why this happened.
Okay, Rob?
Yeah, interesting. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for your call.
And I think in these cases, too, one victim and the robber, the one that was also a robbery, he was at a gay bar, and he was standing outside smoking. And I remember Gloria telling me last week that there are bias crimes in addition to hate crimes where people will target areas around a gay bar because of those old stereotypes that the people there won't fight back, that they're too ashamed to report police, that they're an easy mark. And that gentleman, Columbus police said he didn't tell them about any feeling that it was a hate crime, but he afterward in the TV report indicated that feeling. The other two men, it seemed pretty obvious from the, you know, what the men said to them, you know, the one had been holding hands with the friend and had kissed goodnight. And that's the attack occurred right after that. So, you know, I'm not sure if Columbus police will end up categorizing these as hate crimes. I think, you know, they have their definition within the community. I think there's a definite feeling that they were based on hate. So, and the response has been accordingly.
Okay. I want to talk to Gloria and Carla, but about kind of what you do talk about with police when you're training them or educating them about these kinds of issues. What are you telling them that they don't already know?
It's actually one of my favorite things to do. I love history, and many new officers don't know the history of law enforcement and the LGBT community.
Okay.
So I give them
a
history.
From a different generation. They
correct.
Just, okay.
But that history has had a long impact both with law enforcement and with the LGBT community. Yeah. And we're trying to build that bridge and get past it. It's been very effective. Many new officers don't know about the Stonewall riots, don't know about the old laws, don't know about the old classification of homosexuality, and I'm putting that in quotes, as a mental illness, about our community being targeted with incarceration and shock therapy, etc. So I give them a history lesson and explain to them why some of our community might be a little hesitant to work with them. I do the same thing on the other side, though, in the community, and give them a history lesson about how law enforcement was trained so that we're building that bridge of communication.
Carla, tell us about the Stonewall history, because there may be people listening right now that don't know where Stonewall comes from and that it's from a place of violence.
Well, there was a little bar called the Stonewall Inn in New York, and it was the night that Judy Garland passed away, and she was, of course, the big gay icon. So there was a town in mourning. And usually in those days, when the police would raid a bar, they would arrest people for being gay. And most of the time, people would switch partners. So if there were men and women in the bar and they were gay, they would act like they were straight and dance together. Well, on this particular night, I think that they were a little angry that, there, of course, someone had passed away. They were, and it was during the civil rights movement of our 60s anyway. Mm-hmm. So people were at unrest, right? Just during the Vietnam War, people were getting angry about the establishment and government. And so I think that all of that played into that evening. And when the police raided the bar, they didn't switch partners, and they fought back. And then there were lots of riots in the streets. And so the word Stonewall has become synonymous with a lot of LGBT organizations, even though our community center is not affiliated with any national organization. We still retain that word. But a lot of our young people that are LGBT do not know what that word comes from either. It's very interesting. So history is always important, even for our own community, to make sure that people understand what happened a long time ago.
Okay, so another little history lesson then. How long has Pride been around?
32 years with Stonewall Columbus. But I recently received something from a friend. John Mabry brought me some journal that was a Pride in 1973. So I think we always count it as 32 years because that's when Stonewall Columbus was born. But I believe we were having Prides probably in the 70s as well. So yeah, 32 years, and we've been doing it.
And Columbus is one of the biggest Pride parades or festivals? It's right up there.
Well, we're the largest parade in the city.
Okay.
All right, in this city. We are the second largest festival and march in the Midwest, second to Chicago. And we are one of the top 10 prides in the country. If you look at, like, just media saying, hey, it's a great pride to go to. It's a very it's a fun day. It's a fun weekend. And so a lot of people say we're one of the friendliest prides in the nation. And we are really. I used to work at Marshall Field, so customer service is very important in my team. And we try to make sure that everybody's happy, but it's a tough few days on everybody. It's very long hours.
Tough, but good. It's like the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, right?
Exactly. A lot of work. We are actually talking now about 14 and 15, so it takes a long time to put it together. So,
email from Nina West, a famous entertainer in Columbus. I just want to thank you for continuing this very important conversation about LGBTQ violence in our community. Such a wonderful panel today. Major kudos to Gloria, Bob, and Carla for being such incredible leaders in our LGBTQ community and community at large. Happy Pride. So on we'll turn the conversation to Pride and get a little bit into that a little bit more. Bob?
And kudos to Nina, too, because she's the one who organized Pink Friday.
That's right.
That was a neat effort.
So kudos to everybody. We will return in just a minute. Stay with us. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
How was the Obama campaign able to beat Mitt Romney in 2012? Journalist Jonathan Alter says it was in part by ignoring the human desire not to be irritating with online fundraising appeals. On the next Fresh Air, Alter talks about what he calls the most consequential election of recent times. His new book is The Center Holds. Join us.
Today at noon on 89.7 NPR News.
Support comes from K.A. Menendian Rug Gallery in Grandview, offering timeless hand-knotted designs from traditional to contemporary, featuring a full-service rug cleaning and repair department. K.A. Menendian, fine oriental rugs since 1910. More information at karugs.com.
Thursday night, The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes returns to WOSU-TV. Jeremy Brett and David Burke star as Holmes and Watson must prove their client's innocence in the death of a retired builder. Watch Sherlock Holmes and the Norwood Builder Thursday night at 10 on WOSU-TV.
The WOSU Public Media Member Card Benefit of the Month for June is the Wexner Center for the Arts. Enjoy two-for-one admission to the galleries all month long. Support 89.7 NPR News at the $85 level and receive your member card. Just visit WOSU.org. And thank you for supporting 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're on the cusp of the 2013 Pride Parade and Festival in Columbus. Still with us is Bob Vitale of Outlook Columbus, Gloria McCauley of Buckeye Region Anti-Violence Organization, better known as Bravo, and Carla Rothan. She's Executive Director of Stonewall Columbus. If you have any questions or comments about Pride Festival, Pride Parade, the whole kit and caboodle now, that's what we're turning our sights to, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Okay, so first, before we move on to the fun stuff, people do worry about security. You and I talked about it last week. Security is something that you started stepping up after Boston.
Right. After the tragedy in Boston, we sat down with Chief Paxton from Division of Fire, Lieutenant Barth from our police division, who has been to almost every Pride for the last 30 years. And we put together a comprehensive plan for safety. Of course, safety being the number one priority. Whenever you have 200,000 people or more in an event, it can be, you know, very chaotic, and especially if something would occur. So after Boston, I think all of the runs in Columbus, all of you know, everybody's doing it. So we knew we were going to be doing that as well. And so we put together this plan, and we're introducing the Division of Fire this year. We've never had them at our festival, but we are employing them to come in, and they will definitely be assisting us this year.
But they'll also be part of it.
Yes. Yes, they will. And then we have also, of course, a Columbus Police Department. We have many off-duty police officers and folks that are, you know, that volunteer. But we also have folks that we actually employ through the police department that are going to be there. We also hired a private security team called Metro Security. They will be there at the festival and march. We have the American Red Cross. They'll be in a little golf cart. They will be looking for, you know, sunstroke, any kind of injuries, Band-Aids. You know, they do small things like that. But also, if anything happens, they'll be on radio as well. And then we have some volunteer, the Grizzly softball team. We have a volunteer security team, and they are big bears, but they're gentle giants, and so we're really excited to have them with us, and they will be the parade security. So we also are doing some education around it and making sure that people, we are going to have protesters there. We always do every year. It's freedom of speech. People are allowed to protest anything, you know, and it's America, but we want to make sure they do it safely and it's peaceful demonstration, and so we will have our folks in between those folks and the you know, in between the protesters and our participants. So that's really important. And we're telling people to ignore the protesters because it's the best thing to do, and it hits home at the best. It's the most effective way of de-escalating, you know, violence. So we're excited that people have been listening to that for many, many years. And so I think it's going to be a very safe day. I feel confident we will have immediate response if anything would happen. And I just feel like the mood, in, as far as I can see right now, is the weather's going to be great and people are going to be having a great time.
Yeah, so, great weather. Yeah. I wanted to make reference to Bob Vitale's column in Outlook this week in the Columbus Pride edition, I should say. You said that the violence was deplorable and something to be aware of, but that it's not an indication of a step backwards and that there's still plenty to be proud of about this year. So just tell us, give us a rundown, because there was a lot.
It really is. It's amazing. When I came to Outlook, I used to think, like, how are we going to fill this magazine every month? But it's kept us pretty busy. since last fall, I think six more states have adopted marriage equality, which is at 13 now in the country, including the District of Columbia. 14 countries now allow same-sex couples to get married. There's been just a feeling that we're moving toward equality at a much quicker pace. And that's a real excitement in the community. And I think that's going to, I think, be the tone of pride this year.
Oh, definitely.
Just a real celebration. It's always such a happy day. You know, there's been a few setbacks. You know, in the city of Columbus, a teacher was fired because she's a lesbian from a Catholic school. So we've had to deal with things like that, too. But I think in each case, the community has responded in such a way that, you know, I think people feel, we were talking before, the LGBT community is not just LGBT people. We have a lot of allies. You don't have 300,000 people at Pride if it were all LGBT people, so from the city. So
they want to watch that parade. That's what they want to see.
Exactly.
And every kid loves a parade. Always lots of children. All right. So tonight, special performance of Hedwig and the Angry Inch at the Short North Stage, of course. Are there still tickets available? Because
yes.
I know there's a reception afterwards or something.
Okay. Definitely.
All right. Check that out. Then the Pride Art Show, what's that about?
We had a Pride Art Show with Spinelli's Deli. It was in the first week of second week of June. And, you know, the community center always wants to celebrate the arts in our community. So we try to have expression in that manner. So it's Joe put it together, and it was at the deli, and it was really well attended, about 100 people there, and we just showed our artwork, and it was all Pride-related work, so it was fun.
There was a Dance for Pride on Friday, this Friday, or was that?
That would be Dance for Pride usually is on the first Friday at Wall Street, and it starts on June 1st, and we just keep going, and it's crazy.
Okay.
But every weekend there's something. So Friday and Saturday.
So it's the whole darn month,
right? We go to 11 o'clock on Friday, and we go to 8 o'clock on Saturday. So everybody will take their disco naps at 8 o'clock, and they'll be back out at 10. And every restaurant is filled, and every hotel within at least a 10-mile radius is totally filled.
Yeah, big economic boost for the city. Do you know how much?
You know, it's hard for us to tell those numbers, but it's just a big smile on Mayor Coleman's face and, of course, our city council's face when they see the economic boom. They're always very happy that our city's filled with great, great people from all over the nation.
They travel here for this.
Yes, yes, definitely. Yes. We're a destination Pride. I think that people really have a good time. They know that it's a friendly atmosphere. They have 2 days, so that's always good because they can build a weekend around it. And we have a great softball game on Sunday with our Baton Rouge softball players.
Right.
And that's been a tradition for so many years, and it's going to be a lot of fun.
I mean, I think I know what Dragapalooza is, but tell us, what is what will one see at Dragapalooza? Besides drag, of course.
Some wonderful, wonderful drag queens, I think. Yes, there's just a big celebration there as well. And it's performances all evening, both Friday and Saturday at Axis.
And if I can put in a plug, Outlook's Big Gay Dance Party is tomorrow at the Garage, which is at 40 East Long downtown.
Thanks.
There it is.
So, so where is it at?
It's at the Garage, which is kind of a legendary gay bar in Columbus. Mm. It was opened from the 70s to I think 2000. Mm-hmm. It closed, and it's reopening as an LGBT dance club. Our party starts at 9 p.m. tomorrow.
Okay. Go ahead.
I was just going to say all of these companies have sponsored Pride with dollars. So they're all having events as well. But it's really a great thing because it costs us about $236,000 to produce this event every year. And it is very overwhelming. That's not including staff time. So that's just what it costs for the barricades, the police, the, you know, the porta potties, the barricades, the everything. So we really are grateful for all of the support that we've had from the community. It's a huge platform for our nonprofit groups as well. They can get out there and do some face-to-face marketing, mm-hmm. yes, and let people know what they're doing all year long to serve the community. So that's really important. A lot of churches are going to be out, affirming churches. A lot of corporations are going to be out. All of our elected officials are going to be there, of course, and we love having them there because it says something about our city when our government is standing up with us as well.
Okay, so you said the Pride Parade is the biggest parade in Columbus, but how big is it? How do you measure it?
Well, we go by the police numbers. I know we kind of go by the police numbers. They say it's the biggest parade. I mean, they work all of them, and they say this is bigger than the 4th of July parade. So it will be long. We'll kick off at noon at Broad and Front, and we will go east on Broad and then north on High to Goodale Park, and we'll turn left on Buttles. It's going to be really a lot of fun. And I think the way we kind of measure it is the police department basically tells us what they think the crowd within a certain, they pinpoint the radius of a certain area mm-hmm. and how much density it is, and that's kind of how they do it. But we do have over, 150 entries. That's just floats. But some people like Huntington and Chase are bringing like hundreds and hundreds of people, like 400 and 500 people to march. And so the streets will all be lined with people watching the parade and from all over the city. So that's kind of how we measure it.
We were talking earlier about there's going to be a wedding float.
Yes.
Tell us about the wedding element of Pride.
Well, our grand marshals are Joshua and Steven Snyder Hill. Joshua was the gentleman who was in the military, and he works for the Columbus Health Department now, actually. But he's still in the military, active duty. And he was booed at the Republican debates for asking a question via Skype. And he was booed and
about
got national attention.
LGBT issues?
Yes. About his benefits as a military
right.
person. And so he's got a DOMA case that's pending now in the Supreme Court. But he and his partner, Steven, are our grand marshals for their activism. And so they will take 25 couples to Washington, D.C. on Friday to be married on the Supreme Courthouse steps right there in front of our Supreme Court to make a statement. And then they will be bused back here, have their honeymoon night in a hotel about midnight. They'll get back. And then Saturday morning, they wake up, all married folk, and they will be in the parade, of course, a big wedding float for some of those riders. And then, of course, Josh and Steve will be in the car leading the parade. Our color guard will be in front of them. And so the military color guard, people that are Stonewall Color Guard will be leading the parade as well. So we're really excited for all of those participants that they'll be married and be able to do that.
We have a few minutes left, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And if you've got that Twitter address yet, if you don't, I'll give it to you again. It's WOSU All Sides. Gloria?
Yeah, I have been trying to let folks know that this is one of the best weeks of the year. And in spite of what we've heard about what happened last week, it can be a very safe weekend. And I advocate that people just take basic precautions. And in fact, what I've been telling people is talk to the people you're going with and pretend you're going to the state fair. Make a plan.
Yeah, take the bus.
Take the bus. But what do we do if we're separated? Where mm-hmm. are we going to meet? Basic safety planning.
Have a buddy system.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And be happy, be proud, and be safe.
Phil in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome, Phil. Hi, Phil. Are you on there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hi.
Welcome.
Hi, Phil Garrett from the Columbus College of Art and Design, and I just wanted to let you know that we recently worked with the police department to create an It Gets Better video called It Takes Courage Columbus, and these are all LGBT police officers who are part of the video. It's 11 minutes long, and it's up on YouTube.
Oh, cool.
And just recently, a week and a half ago, had a big event at CCAD, but tonight it's screening again at Axis at a pre-pred event. And apparently they screened it last week. Nina West screened it for 600 roaring fans. So I just want to let you guys know about that. But that was a really positive and community project. And just make you aware of it.
Okay. So, of course, this is the offshoot of the It Gets Better. I don't know what to call
campaign.
It. Campaign, right.
Right.
That started to support young people who might be afraid to come out or afraid to grow up.
Mm-hmm.
It gets better.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's reaching out to youth, and it's an anti-suicide message, and it mentions the Trevor Project, and all of us think that it's been a really good collaboration between the school and the CPD, and it's just been a great experience. So.
Well, thanks, Phil, for telling us about that. We appreciate it.
Yep, thanks a lot.
Take care. Larry in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome, Larry.
Hi, guys. Just wanted to compliment the folks that put on Pride, that they do a great job of being family-friendly. My husband and I have a 5-year-old son, and last year was the first year that we were able to celebrate Pride as a family, and I think they've got a great area for families, and it's very family-friendly. So I just wanted to say thanks for that.
And if you do have a family and you'd like to march together, you can line up at the Doubletree down on Front and Broad. There's a Doubletree Hotel. That's where families will meet around 11:30, between 11:30 and 11:45, and so that they'll all march together, which will be a big statement, I think, as well. And then we have a family area with a bounce house and lots of snacks for the kids and things for them to do and play and have fun together.
Okay. Larry, thanks a lot. Have fun this weekend.
Thank you.
Take care. Yeah, someone asked me, well, what's Pride Festival? What do they do at Pride Festival? And I said, it's like I don't know. It's a festival, right?
Yes, we have we dance.
Stages.
We have Diana King and Deborah from The Voice. And so we have some entertainment on Friday night, entertainment on Saturday, a big stage. We also have a community tent where organizations will get up and talk about their different things that they do throughout the year. We're going to have some giant human hamster balls that you can play in. And we'll have a big patio with a big dance party called the Park Street Patio. And it's right there. And it's going to be a lot of fun because we have a DJ spinning tunes, and you can dance and have a good time with your friends.
So lots to do.
Yes.
What are you looking forward to most, Bob?
I think the human hamster ball now.
I think I was going to say, I'm intrigued.
You know, we have a 50-plus crowd, too, and we have a trailblazer tent that's for a lot of our 80- and 90-year-olds are going to be in there, too. So if you're 50-plus and you want to hang out with folks that are your age and meet some new friends, we have an area just for you, and we have food in there and drinks and places to sit down, and then you have your own bathroom facility in there. So that's a big plus at Pride, to have your own bathroom facility that nobody touches. And so that's something that we introduced. And we also have a teen village, which is really exciting. Our teens, our GSAs from Hilliard and around the Central Ohio, put together this teen village, and they're going to be doing bandanas and t-shirt tie-dye, and they're going to have benches that they've decorated, and they're going to sell those for the youth programs that we do at the center. So that's going to be fun, too.
Carla Rothan, Executive Director of Stonewall Columbus. Have fun this weekend.
Thanks
for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Bob Vitale, Editor of Outlook Columbus. You too.
Thank you.
And Gloria McCauley, Executive Director of Bravo. Gloria, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you, Ann.
We'll have links to all three websites on our website at WOSU.org/allsides, so you can check those out and learn more about Pride, among many, many other things. What a week. I feel like I say that every week, but what a week. I want to thank the All Sides staff, producer Michael DeBonis, associate producer Amy Jurovich, assistant producer Rachel Quimby, production assistants Kiram Shaban, Shannon Clary, and Leticia Wiggins, and Emmanuel Jochi, with video production by Rich Karsmitsky and Amber Karsmitsky. Alan DeCenzo is the composer of our theme music. Thanks for listening today. This is listener supported, WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus, and streaming on the web at WOSU.org, 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR news station, a service of Ohio State University.